Hey, Sox fans, welcome to Good Guys Talk Back, a local fan-centric Chicago White Sox podcast, hosted by Nick Borowski and Pat Hester.
Sox fans, welcome back to Good Guys Talk Back. Hey, it's episode 272. I am Nick Morawski. This is a fan-centric Chicago White Sox podcast. We do this live every Sunday night at 9:15 on the Good Guys Talk Back YouTube channel. Subscribe, like, all that fun stuff. Join us in the comments if you have the chance. What a weekend, what a series for our Chicago White Sox. We got a little trend here going on Sunday nights, talking about winning White Sox baseball, which is always fun. Some great weather on the south side. Getting to all that and more with my best friend in the whole wide world, diehard Sox fan in his own right, Pat Hester. Hello, sir.
Hey, buddy. Happy Mother's Day to all of you mothers out there. Hopefully you had a great Mother's Day. I'm just going to share something about my own mother, and because I know she's going to listen eventually. Happy Mother's Day, Kathy, if you're listening. And Nick, I'm sure you want to go visit her and get some galoompie at some point in life, because she only makes it for you.
I have a, if you were allow me to, I don't know if I should tell the story, but I have a great story that I actually was telling my parents about your mother today.
Oh,
it's one of my best favorite stories involving your mom, and it's so great.
But, well, you can tell that at any time. It's a no holds barred kind of podcast here. But I talked to my mother today, and God bless her. She watches every White Sox game, regardless of how they're doing. But she watches it in a particular way. She DVRs every game and then goes back and sees if they won or not, and then is prepared for how she's going to feel about that game during. So it's just how she rolls. She can't handle the pressure of a 12-win team.
Yeah.
But she has to DVR it, see how they're doing midway through, and then decide later how she wants to comfortably view it, knowing whether they won or lost. So happy Mother's Day to all those mothers, all those White Sox mothers out there, and however you consume White Sox baseball, to each their own.
Yeah, a game really only a mother could love today here on Sunday. It was a rough one for the Sox to end this series, but a great series, fun weekend, some winning baseball in the last 16 games. Our Chicago White Sox 12-29 as we record here on the evening of May 12th. Again, the only team in the AL Central under 500. Sox are 6-4 in their last 10 games, 13 games back in the division, if you're following that and paying close attention. A run differential of minus 90. Now, Sox were bottom of the barrel in run diff. I mean, without question, they were miles away.
Did you even have to look it up? Was it even
Miami Marlins are catching up here. Miami Marlins are only at 11 wins. So Sox are not the worst team in all of baseball. And the Miami Marlins are a minus 89 run diff. So nipping on our heels. So, you know, so Sox, I mean, this weekend helped some power. I had a game where they had two home runs, back-to-back home runs, some wild stuff from a team that, you know, had a 3-22 start. So hello to Sydney and Peyton and Scott and so many jumping in here in the comments. You know, I got to say, Pat, watching and I watched a lot of White Sox baseball this past week. And again, this is our so for the third straight week now, we're talking about the Sox winning a weekend series. You know, the Sox kind of having some momentum here into this show, which is fun. Hey, it's fun to talk Sox when they're winning, and especially beating a first-place team in Cleveland, and of all teams, Cleveland. You know, that was great to watch and see. And so as, you know, Friday happened, I'll tell you, after that performance from Garrett Crochet, and we'll get to some of the details and stuff, I got really excited for one of the few times this season So like in anticipation to watch the game on Saturday, after what they did on Thursday and Friday, I was like, I'm looking forward to this on Saturday night. You know, and I heard it was an outstanding tailgate. It was a shame to watch a shame to miss, but fun to see and watch all the videos and all the great stuff that, you know, Sydney had put out there. He does a great job of, you know, putting all that stuff out on social media. But Chicago Sports Bums, another outstanding tailgate from what I saw. Man of the People, John Schriffen was there. And I even heard on the telecast that Steve Stone promising to be at the next one.
Get out of here. Stop yourself.
I got to get you. We got to get out to the next. The next one. I've got to find out when the date is. We got to make an appearance at that.
Let's make a date. Let's you and I just sit down for once in a while and make a commitment to each other, Nick.
Yeah, you're going to eat well. You drink well. Great people. So many wonderful Sox fans out. It's an awesome tailgate. And they had that quarter zip giveaway on Saturday. You know, good weather. The mood was right. In a nice win. So after a 3-22 start, Pat, Sox are 9-7 in their last 16 games. Now, hold on here for a second. Good thing we didn't cash in that plus 3,500 to win the Central.
You get that 61 cents that we would have gotten back?
We held our ground. You never know what can happen here. This was Pedro's thoughts on that tough start and what the Sox have been doing in the last 16 games. Hey, just do your job. Just flush it. Short-term memory. Come back out and do it again.
Wait a minute. Stop. Did you add in just flush it on your own?
Did he say that again? This is his actual quote.
Okay, I didn't mean to interrupt
you. No, this is his actual quote.
I can't imagine that he hasn't come up with something better than flush it by at this point. But
everybody's
got, I didn't mean to interrupt you. I apologize. No.
Everybody's got those go-to sayings. And this is what he said, Pedro said, before the Sunday finale, you know, talking about, you know, how bad things were. And now, hey, we're 9-7. So this is Grifol. Just do your job. Just flush it. Short-term memory. Come back out and do it again. Keep the faith. I was able to stay on an even keel and not get two down or two up. Even Steven is what Pedro Grifol is there.
Sure. Yeah. Even Steven. You know what I was thinking about, Nick, and I didn't shame on me for not looking it up. But April, I would have to imagine the last three Aprils, this team has been just god awful. And we've talked about it so much. Yeah. And not that this team was expected to do anything, but the fact that they've really gone down their leg and gotten worse every year in the month of April since, you know, 2021, let's call it. I mean, it's just baffling that how bad they've been in the month of April. Now, this year obviously takes the cake when you talk about a 3-win month, but my goodness, you know, it just emphasizes how much you can really bury yourself in a season if you can't even just manage to be average or 500 in the first month of the year, and this year being no exception. So, and last year, we've talked about it for 3 years in a row on this podcast, Nick. We've talked about, listen, you have to get off to somewhat of a good start. We talked about fast starts. Hell, next year, I don't know where we'll be at, what kind of team we'll have, if we're going to be in a mode of being competitive or not. But my goodness, can we just be 500 to start the year? I'm not going to ask for a whole lot when we go into 2025 in April. I mean, my goodness, I guess you have to flush it. What else can you say?
Yeah, that is a real point. You know, I was reading a book on the 1959 Chicago White Sox, and I might butcher the title, but it's Strength Up the Middle, Strength Down the Middle. It was a great read. I bought it at a Sox Fest. You know, someone had a vendor table years ago, and it was out for a while, and about the 1959 team, but they go through, you know, a bunch of years leading up to the 59 team. And Al Lopez, who was the manager, talked about, you know, what happened in 1958 to the Chicago White Sox. And they had a horrible start. They had a horrible start to the season. April and May, they were pretty much buried. You know, it was very difficult to dig themselves out. And, you know, he talked about in the book, you know, quoted with regards to the 59 team, which was so much different, you know, you're not going to win the pennant in April and May, but you very well could lose it by how you start off. So, you know, 59, different story, and look how that season went. And it's like getting those hot starts. Now, it doesn't always go, you know, your way. In 2016, well documented, the Chicago White Sox had an outstanding start, like 23-10 to kick off that year. And then the wheels fell off. The great Matt Latos just fell apart. And, you know, we all know what happened that fall, and we're still trying to figure things out now here in May of 2024. But there are good things, you know, to discuss, and we're going to get to Brian Ramos because that is a positive thing. But you're right, man. It's something you and I and so many other people discuss. Like if you can, you know, if you can catch some people off guard, possibly, especially with so many divisional games, you know, in April and May, figure that out. Because when you're not playing your division, there's some tough opponents. You're going to have some teams that are built for October and beyond. And it just hasn't gone their way at all. But, you know, the last 16 games, some different baseball. Have you found yourself, you know, getting caught up a little bit, you know, especially this past weekend of this is fun, you know?
Yeah. Listen, when you have no expectations of a team doing anything, it's just like, listen, it's the sounds of summer, right? This is the soundtrack of the season. The weather's nice. It's nice to turn on a ball game. Right. And it's nice to be like surprised about when things go well, and you can be happy about watching a performance like Fetty had. You can be excited about Crochet and watching what he's saying coming off the mound, and how fun that is to try and figure out if interpret what might be said, because that's cool, right? Because it's fun and it's beautiful, you know, to be on the South Side and enjoy a game, and the fireworks are going off and the fans are happy, right? That's what it's all about. Yep. This is what we live for. This is really, Nick, what we talk about when we're in, you know, January and February, and we're counting down to spring training. We're here, we're living it, because eventually it'll be past us. So, right. I don't want to just say, okay, just enjoy it because it's baseball. I'd rather be like, let's get excited about, you know, contending for a division title. But let's be honest, we still love this team. We still love the game of baseball. So why not get excited about a win? There's nothing wrong with getting excited about a team when you win when your team stinks. So, I will, when I'm around, Nick, and I can afford the time to do it, I'm turning on the game, and I'm excited to turn on the game, or I'm checking in when I can, right? It's usually from a baseball field or a softball field these days, but that's what I'm doing. And it's fun and exciting. And again, when you've got things to look forward to in development, and guys like Ramos and Fetty, and seeing what Crochet is going to do, and thinking about what the decisions are going to be made with his, you know, his future as we're looking at innings and things. I mean, those are all interesting things to consider and look at. And especially as we creep closer and closer into June and closer to the trade deadline, what kind of shape will this team take over the next, you know, year and a half? It will be determined over this next couple months, really. So there's some good things to think about. And when you think about Corey Lee and the things that you've seen that you'd like to see from him, and hoping that he can continue to develop, and you look at that building block for strength at the, you mentioned it in the book, right? Strength up the middle, mm-hmm. right? So you've Corey Lee, you have Ramos, you have, you know, you've got the guy in the minors that I can't think of his name right now,
Montgomery.
Right. And then you've got Robert. So if you're looking at things to be kind of looking towards the future, and it's like, wow, I can kind of see some things come together. Maybe I see some pieces coming together with a pitching staff, maybe, but you know, not all of it's going to pan out. So There are reasons to watch and reasons that are excited. It might not be because you're going to go out there and feel like you're going to, you know, get closer to the division. It might be, I'm going to tune in because I want to see how this guy develops, knowing that he's going to fail at points, but how will he bounce back, and how will, you know, he adjust to the league when the league adjusts to him. So those are all reasons to tune in.
Yeah. Yeah. There are definite reasons. You know, we're going to talk a little bit more about Crochet and, you know, other guys that we might see. But again, what's happening at 35th and Shields? Hello, Howard and John, and thank you so much for jumping in. I'm going to get to Peyton. Had a question about other White Sox books. I'll have to get a list out, and I can put it out on social media. I got a few that you know, I always bring up, but you know, Howard brought up a good point, and our good friends from, speaking of books, our good friends from Last Comiskey, the Flesh Brothers, who did just an amazing job with that Last Comiskey doc, and they were good enough to be on this podcast a few times, and you know, I helped out just a little bit, you know, in some of my memories as a young fan with that 1990 year and Comiskey Park and stuff. And there's a book now. There's a book on Last Comiskey put up by Ken Smoller. And I think there's going to be a little launch party at the Chicago History Museum this Thursday. And, you know, again, if you love the doc and everything that Last Comiskey puts out, I mean, this is a great one to add to your collection. I got to get my hands on a copy. You know, Peyton asked just other White Sox books. I mean, gosh, I've read so many. I talk about Chili Dog MVP all the time. That Eckhart Press that I believe did Last Comiskey or potentially was involved in it. Chili Dog MVP, absolutely take a look at that. Vec is in a wreck. You know, that's a good one as well. Obviously, it spans more than just White Sox. I read one on the 1977 Southside Hitmen, and that was a few years before our time, but you know, so many stories from like my parents and grandparents that would talk about that team and how exciting they were. And like, that really gave Sox fans a fun summer. So there are more. I'll try to put a list together, but so Mike Soroka was on the Hill on Sunday, Pat, and he's really, I would say he's gotta be the odd man out.
Yeah.
He is, now 0-5 in ERA, north of 6, you know, weakest link in a, and kind of a spotty starting staff. And that's maybe to be generous, although I've been happy with, you know, Flexen and you mentioned Fetty. They've been putting to some nice starts together. Crochet had a bump in the road and man, he was electric on Friday. I'd like to see Nastrini and Cannon. I'd like to see, you know, those guys those guys back up. I'm kind of done with Soroka.
Yeah, when you're talking about, you know, the weakest link in this starting staff, I mean, a staff that's inconsistent and guys that are reclamation projects, and when you've got the Clevengers of the world, you know, coming in to try and eat innings for you, to try and just kind of navigate your way through a season, there really isn't a spot in my you know, starting staff for a guy that's a 1-5 with a 6 ERA. There just isn't. So because if you really are, if major league games are, we're not going to, you know, just toss them aside, right? As our manager doesn't want to do, and you actually want to win games, then you have to look at it and say, this is a guy that I can't have because I can't trust him to be on the mound. And we don't have time to really develop him because I'm not going to compromise a game. So that's a little bit unfortunate, but I'd rather see guys with more of a bright future ahead of them on the mound, really.
Yeah. You know, it's what's the point in my mind? It's like, what are we doing here? And then that goes for guys like Maldonado too, and Shoemake. Like, why are you still around? You know, there's got to be other guys that need a look-see as we approach the deadline. And of course, you know, when other guys are going to be getting looks later on in the season, like there might be guys that we're more excited about that will get looks towards the end after the deadline. But, you know, there's got to be a collection of folks. And I put Nastrini and Cannon in there. It's like you could be doing what Soroka is doing right now.
Yeah.
You know, get a few more games under your belt. You know, like you might not be tearing it up in AAA, but still, I mean, this is the year for this kind of stuff.
You know, do you think that kind of, like, if you bring guys back and you're just kind of ping ponging them back and forth and they don't have the success that you're looking for, that can, with some guys, maybe not everybody, but that can kind of ruin, not ruin them, but really set them back. If you're not, you know, do we have to coddle people is, I guess, what I'm thinking, Nick, is like, you have to, like, okay, you've got to be hit on you and you've got to be dominant before we really want to bring you up because we know you're going to have a setback once you get here. Or is there some value to bring him up there and up here and, you know, letting him get their brains beat in a little bit?
Well, I think there's value in failing. I think there's absolute like a value in failing. You're not going to have success all the time. Even when you feel like you're at a successful point in your career, if you get there and you feel like, you know what, I figured it out. You know, I've been able to maximize my skill set and the mental capacity, and things are going well for me. You're still going to have blips. If you don't know how to handle some of that, that's where I think there could be issues, of course. Now, the back and forth, I feel like we've seen that with Kolas, right? I have no idea what the plan is for Oscar Kolas. I mean,
I think the plan is that him not to be in a White Sox uniform. Right. I mean, that's what your manager has told you.
It seems that way. You know, a guy that, again, was talked about in a way of this is the future last off season. And, you know, we could not wait. And so maybe that is damaging. Right. And I think, you know, there's of course a point when you get to a level like the major league level and like your skill set is just not there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I didn't really see that, again, small sample size, but I didn't quite see it from Nastrini and Cannon of, oh, we don't want to see them for a while now because we're going to be compromising things. But I think it's time to just let them get some innings in, man. Like, yeah, kind of set it and forget it for a little while.
I love the set and forget it mentality.
Yeah, I know you do.
And the greatest roasters ever, by the way. You put a couple chickens in there, you set it and forget it. It's fantastic. A rack of ribs and some lamb chops.
Boom. Set it and forget it is Ramos. Last week on this show, you know, Ramos had just been called up and, you know, we were excited for that. And it was, hey, don't sit this guy and just, you know, almost make him learn a lesson or watch how things are done at the big league level. Please play this guy. Play this guy. Let's see what can happen. And he's been fun to watch.
Yeah.
I mean, he really, there's something about the way he's been playing and knowing that he very well could factor into the future. His bat, you know, his glove, you know, the Sox have been playing this guy. I mean, he's been up and he has been producing 9 games, 8 for 30, pair of doubles, a pair of ribbies, only 3 strikeouts, 1 walk. I mean, he does not look overmatched, and he's throwing some leather too. He had a play on Saturday. He had a play at third where the ball, you know, took him into the foul territory. I don't know if you saw this. He made a play on it. He had a reach, and I don't even think he took multiple steps. He absolutely gave it his all. Now Vaughn helped with the stretch, but that was just a really, like, you have to be, that's a reactionary position. Mm-hmm. It absolutely is. And that was fun to see that too. You know, he's been handling himself with the bat and now with the glove.
So what do you do when Mendick's ready to go?
Well, here's what our fearless leader had said. So there was a Sun Times article about this, Pat, and the expectation when Danny Mendick went on the injured list last weekend was that Ramos would return to the minors. So as soon as Mendick is ready, Ramos would head back. But if he keeps performing well, the Sox might give him an extended look. The Sox are 6-3 with Ramos in the lineup. Okay. So this is what Grifol had to say to all of that. We'll see. clear as mud.
You know what? Less is more. Less is more with Pedro anyway. If all he said in the post game is we'll see to every answer or every question, that would be fine with me. It would be really suck for the Pedro Grifol quote of the week, or, you know, that would be no fun because you just say, we'll see all the time. So it would be not interesting. We'd have to get rid of that segment and that would be no fun. We couldn't get sponsors for it. We'd lose a lot of money, but I'm telling you, Nick, that would be better for him as a person and probably as an organization. If everything was just an answer of we'll see.
Yeah, he doesn't want to tip his hand with the way the Sox have been playing.
But are you telling me on this roster you can't find room for a Ramos and a guy like, and again, Danny Mendick is who Danny Mendick is. I don't know if he'll ever materialize in anything that's special, but a guy that was really hot and has been a spark plug for this organization when he has been here in the past. You're telling me you can't find room on the roster for both of those guys?
I mean, you'd probably have to move Mendick over to second. You know, Shoemaker would have to disappear, and Ramos plays third base. You know, I wonder with this team if, and this is what I've kind of wondered with Maldonado, which, you know, I think it's a fool's errand if they're trying to do what I'm thinking. I'm just trying to, man, hypothesize. If they're playing some of these guys that they went out and, you know, 1 year deals, and, you know, if they're playing them and trying to really play them up, limiting some of the younger guys from playing the veterans with the hope that they can flip them, like we saw with Grossman. You know, Grossman dealt for surprisingly something of hopefully value, you know, an arm, and goes back to Texas. And is that why the Sox play guys more than they should? Just to showcase them.
You know what? If you're showcasing Maldonado, I mean, really, the book is out on this guy. If somebody would want to
get that,
really, yeah. I mean, honestly, Nick, it's not like you're going to go, a team's going to go, oh, look at that Maldonado batting 108. That's something I've never seen from him before. Isn't this fantastic? We'd like to give our entire farm system for him. I mean, let's be honest with each other. That can't be the case. The only reason that I can think of in that particular case is, one, he's a veteran. He's a catcher. Pedro is a catching guru, supposedly. He's, you know, he's going to be very high on, you know, veteran catchers as a catching guru as he is. So he's going to lean heavily on him for whatever reason. And they brought him in, you know, they want to justify the reason for bringing him over to help along the staff or whatever you want to say and justify, you know, this is the reason why we have this guy. That's why he's playing, Nick. I mean, it's not to showcase him. Other guys I can't speak for. But I can tell you that you're not fooling anybody by playing Maldonado every day.
That is a part of our Pedro Grifol quote of the week, you know, talking about Maldonado. So we'll have to wait to get to that in comparison to Corey Lee.
For those of you that are not in the biz or classically trained like Nick and I are in broadcasting, that's what's called a tease to keep you around to the end of the show.
It's a tease. Corey Lee, you know, has some offense from him. It's not like you're getting anything more defensively from Maldonado. You know, it's just Pedro is goofy with vets opposed to rookies. That's why I'm so shocked that Ramos has got so much playing time. Mm-hmm. And I think that's maybe a message from the top. It's like, play Ramos. We want to see what we've got here. And that's been, I have found that to be exciting to watch. I mean,
Is it because Tony's still around and he's being consulted with? This seems like something Tony would do.
You see the connection there? I mean, Pedro claims he talks to Tony like on a daily basis.
Oh, Lord, so, help us all.
You know, that's like Stan the Caddy from Seinfeld. It's like Kramer is listening to Stan the Caddy instead of his lawyer, Jackie. And that's when all hell breaks loose. So,
you know what? If we could, we probably do a really good job of bringing something Seinfeld-ish in every week. And I think that's great. I think we keep that alive, keep it going. Well done on you for that one.
Winning against the Cleveland Guardians, I love it. Absolutely love it. What I found very interesting was the Sox had 3 wins in a row against Cleveland. First time since 2019 that they've had 3 straight wins against Cleveland. Sox, of course, took 3 out of 4, which is not bad at all. That was actually great to see. I can't stand Cleveland. Love when they can beat up on them, especially with Cleveland being in first place.
I'm glad you brought that up because I was trying to think of the last time that they had maybe won 4 in a row, you know, going into today's game. Like, when was the last time we beat Cleveland 4 games in a row? So for the fact that they, what did you say, 2021? 2019. 2019. I mean, that's way too long when you play a team that often, not to beat them 3 times in a row once in a while. That's craziness.
Years ago when I had, you know, my season tickets and everything, I had a coworker that became, you know, a friend of mine that was from Cleveland. And he was a big just Cleveland sports fan. They were the Indians at the time, but you know, we would talk, you know, when we had the same lunch or we were in the teacher lounge or whatever, and swap stories about some of those 90s teams and how the Sox pretty much were able to compile like the 94, 95 Indians. Eventually, we had just about everybody except for Carlos Baerga on the team at one point or the other. And I would, when Cleveland was in town, I would take him to the game, and, you know, we had a great time. He was a really good sports fan. I mean, you know, the Cleveland was beating up on the Sox at that point. That was at the beginning of the rebuild, the most recent rebuild. But we had a wonderful time. And, you know, I was just talking to him about, you know, Cleveland, the organization, and, you know, they don't spend money, you know, they let guys walk, they trade guys. And, but yet, how are you still competitive? How are you? And all he kept talking about was the organization, the front office, the great front office. We love our front office and how they make decisions and, you know, how they do things. And so I don't know. There's obviously something to be said with what's happening in Cleveland. And I want to get to an article a little bit later on from The Athletic that maybe got the Sox in a tizzy. But, you know, talking about how Cleveland's been able to be successful this year with having a first year manager and still sustaining injuries while pretty much running it back.
Yeah.
You know, so front office absolutely means something. And, you know, I remember those conversations vividly.
Well, they've always been an organization that, first of all, I would say the word I would equate them to is savvy, right? They know exactly what they want to do. They are able to, they take the old adage of, I'd rather get rid of a guy a year early than a year late type of mentality, like a Bill Belichick. When Bill Belichick was still one of the best, you know, coaches in football, he would always get rid of guys a year early rather than a year late. And that's how the Guardians have always operated. It's like, listen, we're not going to be able to pay this guy what he's worth, but I know that I've got, you know, probably three or four other guys in the minors in terms of arms. One of them is bound to pan out for us, and we can afford to get rid of this guy because we'll bring this guy up on this contract and we can fit that into our structure and it'll be just fine. So yeah, it may hurt to lose, you know, another Cy Young candidate type of arm, but we've got possibly another one or two in the farm system, and one of them will pan out for us. And if the other one doesn't, we can trade him and get other assets. So that's the way that you really want to do things in terms of if you're operating with a limited budget, is the way Cleveland does it or the way Tampa has traditionally done it. You can't operate in the way that we've done it with, you know, seemingly a limited budget and not be able to, you know, we seemingly acquire guys and try and go the lightning in the bottle method, which has never, ever worked in my recollection. Let's get a guy that it's on his last leg and trying to prove something to everybody else. And we can get him on a short deal and pay him a little bit of money and we'll see what we can get out of him and just squeeze a little drop out of that rag a little bit and see if we can get something out of him. That's not a way to really run an organization for sustained success. That's a way to maybe try and have these pop-up victories once in a while or pop-up years where we contend or, you know, hey, we were third place, but man, we really had a good run or we had a good month and we were in contention and it was a fun summer. That's how we run things here.
Keep that thought in terms of kind of getting rid of somebody too early than too late. I have a little, I think it's going to rub people the wrong way, and I'm sure there's going to be some, you know, some some anger, but it's a topic I want to get to in just a moment okay. Here is where I want to talk about Crochet, you know, because Crochet, oh, by the way, Andrew Vaughn, first home run of the season. So if you were worried about Andrew Vaughn, you can just stop.
If you were doing the Andrew Vaughn drinking game, you've stayed clean and sober for a long time. Good for you.
You are absolutely running lean. Yeah, so he's, I think he had a double today on Sunday, so watch out for Andrew Vaughn. Crochet on Friday, 11 strikeouts, zero walks, which, man, his ratio, his strikeout to walk ratio is outstanding. Crochet's average fastball sat at 97.1 on Friday. For the season, Crochet is in the 92nd percentile for fastball velocity. According to Baseball Savant, he's 23rd in whiff percentage among qualified pitchers. Here's Pedro's thoughts. His body feels good. He feels strong, but I don't think there's a blueprint on this one. I really don't. We're going to have to go on signs and resources that we have in communication with him. We'll see how it goes. Now, we talked last week about Pedro discussing, you know, where he's at with innings, and we might have to go bullpen. They're going to be really looking for signs and resources here and having healthy communication with Crochet, which I think is important to always be talking to the person you want to make decisions on. Speaking of decisions, threw this out there on social media, and I got a lot of people, I think, in a lather. I would love for them, let me just say this, I would love for the White Sox to lock up Crochet right now. Sign him on an extension if you can. Build around Crochet. You got a couple other arms in the system. You're going to have to spend. Get ready to spend. You need to spend on an anchor and an ace, but keep Crochet around. We know, Pat, in our lifetime, and this probably goes on for a long period of time as Sox fans, the Sox don't pay for pitching. You know, they absolutely don't. You know, so you try to get it early here. Do you try to extend early? Hmm. Or if Crochet keeps pitching like he's pitching, to your kind of point with Cleveland, which might not be apples to apples, if some organization offers you a crazy package for Garrett Crochet, and you know, well, I've got some arms. I've got Nastrini. I've got Thorpe. I've got Cannon. I've got Schultz in a few years. You're going to give me that for Crochet and some of the maybe health question marks, I'm doing it. I'm absolutely doing it. Or is that goofy talk?
Well, I think the goofy talk is really to think about extension right now. That's just my opinion. To me, that's a little bit, you know, you're talking about a guy that has had some nice outings, really nice outings. You're talking about a strikeout to walk ratio that you can absolutely live with. You're talking about a guy that has some good control. You're talking about a guy that has a plus fastball, and you're talking about a left-handed pitcher, which, you know, there aren't, you know, good ones like that just falling out of trees. So I can understand why you'd want to do that. But to me, it's more of a, and this isn't a me saying this is what the White Sox, you know, because of what they normally do, should do. This is me just thinking, I'm going to put a little bit of caution out there right now, because nobody knows this guy's medicals better than the White Sox do, right? They see him every day. They know what's been going on in that arm. They know what to really expect out of that body. This is a guy that they've got a lot of data on. I would say that rushing to sign him or lock him up probably seems a little premature to me. I'm more of a, let's try and find a way to navigate through this season first. If it costs me a little bit more on the back end because I do that, so be it. It's not like you're going to be, you know, paying through the roof over the next several years in terms of salary. So I'd rather do a wait and see. Now, of the other side, I could see a lot more of, tell me that you can put together a really enticing package to trade him for other assets as you're rebuilding. There's no reason to keep a guy like a Garrett Crochet around just to have him go out there. And then, you know, that you're going to be limiting in his innings anyway. So it's not going to really be contributing to a lot more wins. So there's no real benefit to keep him, right? If the idea is, well, we got to keep him around because he's an anchor of our staff this year, and he's going to contribute to X amount of wins. That doesn't really make a lot of sense, because you know you're going to be starting to cut back his innings anyway and probably do skip starts and all that other stuff. So though I love what I've seen, and I'd love to see it pan out because of what we saw when he came up. What was it, 2020 when he came
2020,
up? Yeah. 2020 when he came up, and it was like, oh my God, the guy's throwing 103 miles an hour and blowing everybody away. This is amazing, and it's great, and we'd love to see it. And then all of a sudden, there he is in Oakland, and he's hurt, and we, you know, hasn't been seen for quite a while. Because you want to see it come to fruition, you want to see this story end on a positive note in a White Sox uniform, I could get why you'd want to say lock this guy up. But man, I can't co-sign with you on that one. I'm more of a, let's see how this season goes. And I'd rather pay more on the back end because he had a great season.
The better he pitches, the more costly it's going to be.
Yeah.
You know, so that's my thing is, and again, we know what kind of organization we're talking about. Different-ish front office, same damn owner. And I think the same, you know, philosophy and mentality. I get where you're coming from. I'm just kind of throwing that out. I'm thinking about this a lot, maybe more than I should be thinking about it. And after Friday's start, I just was wondering, you know, our organization's going to be kind of, you know, because we know everybody's on the table, apparently, you know, still, even after this, you know, hot 9-7 in the last 16 games, and it rightfully so. Have the conversation. We are, you know, we know what the direction is. We know what the Sox need to do. And I think guys like Tommy Pham, he's auditioning for his next place of where he's going to play. I mean, you know, Paul DeJong, he's got some power, some pop at short. Some team might say, hey, we need that kind of guy, you know, for the stretch run. There's going to be others, you know, Grossman left and I think there are going to be absolutely others, and it's going to happen probably sooner rather than, you know, closer to the trade deadline. You might still see stuff, of course, at the trade deadline, but I think there are going to be guys, you know, saying we're saying goodbye to, you know, more often than not as we ramp up to July 31st. So look, I know people are going to inquire. Organizations will absolutely inquire. If, like, if you're having, you know, if you're open for business, you know, what's up with this Crochet? Because the better he pitches, the better he looks, the more comfortable he is, you know, and we just know what the White Sox do.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'd like to address successful, and this isn't in a bad way. He, you know, he says, guys, you have to think about the fans. We have a kid that we like, and this to build a bridge of hope, got to have him. Believe me, I get all that. And I really would love to, again, as I mentioned, I'd love to see the story come to fruition as a guy that was fantastic when he first came up and blowing everybody away at 103 miles an hour and goes down with an injury. And you really want to see him come back and be that feel good story and a guy that you want to go see every fifth day. Right. Cause you could see him and go, man, he's like the Chris Sale of this Sox team, right? When the Sox were terrible, at least you could go out and watch Sale every fifth day. And it's like, oh man, Sale's on the mound. This is going to be great. Let's go see what he can do today. I totally get that. And I'm not going to get angry at people that if they say I have a different opinion than you, I want to keep this guy because I want to go see him because I'm a fan and I want to see a guy pitch. And I get that 100%. But if I'm being honest about what I'd like to see done, I'm going to be realistic about what this season is. And I'm going to be realistic in the fact that if someone's willing to give me some decent assets for a guy that I know is somewhat damaged, and I really have, it's really murky on what his future could be. You know, let's think about it too. When he came up, it wasn't like he was a longtime ball player with a lot of innings in college and in high school. He picked up the game late. You know, that may be a benefit to him, but it's not like a guy that's been around that there's a long storied history on a Garrett Crochet and how dominant he's been throughout his life. So I just think there's more questions than answers with Garrett Crochet. And I'd like to have more of those things answered by the end of the year. And you could definitely like convince me at some point, like, listen, we got to have this guy because over the next 2 years, we plan on being competitive and you've got to have that ace type guy in your staff. And there should be no reason why you should be concerned. He's had the Tommy John already that, you know, he's not going to re-injure that. He's going to be just fine. Okay. I can believe all that. But as we stand right now, I think there's still murkiness and you hear it from the manager and whether you like Pedro or not, which most of us don't, he doesn't even know what to expect. He says you're looking for signs and wonders. I'm sorry, signs and resources to try and figure out what the hell we're going to do with this guy. So
you got to listen to the source on that one. But I hear you. I you know my thoughts on pitching though. You know, that's where you start. You got to build, you know, a barn of arms, exciting arms, and you need veteran aces. You need to spend money, you know, when you don't have enough pitching. I'm talking about good pitching, you know, and Yes, I think you still need to watch this guy. Of course, you absolutely do. This is uncharted territory, but there's something special going on, you know, yeah. And I hope he can stay healthy. I absolutely hope he can stay healthy to put on display what he's capable of. You know, yeah, there's been some bumps this year. That's going to happen. That absolutely is going to happen in his first year as a starter. But when you see some of the things he's been able to do, like Friday, there's almost like kind of no fear. Like, I know my stuff. Yeah. I know it. It's powerful. It's nasty. And when he's got the command, like he absolutely does, it gets me thinking like, oh man, I hope this front office has a new direction of like prioritizing pitching. And I'd like to see him stick around.
And by the way, one day when you and I are retired and looking for something to do and we open up a White Sox bar and grill, I think Barn of Arms is a great name for a bar and grill for a Sox bar. I think that's fantastic.
There needs to be more Sox bars and definitely in like the South, Southwest suburbs. Barn of Arms would be an awesome name.
Does it sound too like gruesome? Like you're just thinking you're going to be like some limbs as you walk in? I like that though.
We'll be very popular during October, which hopefully the Sox will be playing quite a bit of baseball during, you know, obviously the Halloween time.
Yeah, when I'm in my 60s, it'll be great.
I'll be able to get all the memorabilia here, the bobbleheads, all the stuff. We'll bring it into the Barn of Arms, and but we'll just be doing our live shows from the Barn of Arms.
Peyton says, "What would the Pedro meal be on the menu at the Barn of Arms?"
We'll see. It's just no on the description. It's we'll see. Like it's going to be a surprise. We'll you don't know what you're going to get.
Flush it. Why don't you just go eat it on the toilet? Because you're going to have to flush it after you eat this.
Successful says the arm barn. That's another good one. Why not? I like what you're thinking, Pat. So, you know, Luis Robert Jr., I haven't seen him in a while. I kind of forgot he was. your what hurts? Luis Robert Jr., he's got a bobblehead day coming up later this month. Memorial Day weekend. I don't think he's going to be playing for it.
Has he ever played on his own bobblehead day? Like we should go back and research. Has he ever been healthy? Because he's had several bobbleheads.
That's a wonderful question. He's had a dual bobblehead with Aloy, mm-hmm. which I think they both might have missed that bobblehead for. He had the bobblehead last year where he was in the City Connect uniform. I'm staring at it right now here. and then so I don't that's a great question. This will be his third bobblehead.
Need an intern because we need somebody to look this up or some type of producer. But
we'll work on that. I wouldn't worry about him playing in this one. It sounds like he's had a bit of a hiccup in his rehab. Robert Jr. at 70%. Grafol said Luis Robert Jr., who felt a little grab in his right hip flexor as he recovers a grade 2 strain, is running at 70% intensity. Robert is perhaps 5 to 7 days away from being at 90% and taking the next step, which would be back on the field at games in Arizona. So
if we're doing the math right, and 5 to 7 days, he'll be at 90%. So that would mean in 10 days, he'll be at 100%.
And then he's going to start playing some games or doing something at the Arizona.
As long as nobody grabs him.
Yeah, no more grabbers. So that would put you at May 22nd-ish, May 23rd. He might have some activity in Arizona. I don't think he's going to be able to make it for the 25th for the bobblehead game.
You never know, Nick. I mean, there's things that can happen. You never know the miraculous healings of a Luis Robert Jr. body, a man that's kept himself in tip-top shape for many years.
Sydney's got a great point here. I put it up, in the comment section. I don't trust the Sox with injury reports. Sydney says he doesn't. I don't. Yeah, we've had too many crazy things over the years. Where I don't even know how they monitor injuries sometimes. I think there's just kind of a guess. Nobody even knows he's just making that could be just Grifol just kind of like, I don't know.
I think you remember when you were a kid, you remember these games where you had where there was like the paper things and you go, you'd open them up and
flap, 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 fl
And you flip it over and it says, I love Joe Blow on, right? I think that's what Pedro does. He's going, okay, he'll be 90% in 3 or 4 days. And then it's, in 3 or 4 days, he's got to do it all over again.
It's very plausible. I thought maybe like kind of a magic eight ball. You know, maybe somebody in the front office created like a Sox magic eight ball where they have just go-to answers for different things. And he just kind of shakes it up and he's like, I don't know, 70%.
At least it would be interesting if we saw him shake a magic eight ball. Yeah, right. Might as well have some fun with it.
It's all about like, let's just have some fun this year. You know, again, like have some fun with your interviews. You know, again, this weekend was fun. It's been fun to watch this team. I've got tickets for Tuesday. So I'll be there on Tuesday. The weather's not looking great. Nationals are in town. It'll be my son's first game of the year. So I'm looking forward to that. Look at you.
You're going to have Nationals in town, not so great weather. You can kick back and relax. Those are going to be wide lanes for you to wander down, my friend.
Well, I mean, you know, I do have Stadium Club passes.
Oh, wow.
So I'll be able to, you know, kind of duck in some shelter. I've got to find the campfire milkshake.
Okay.
I've got to find it.
Is Vinny a big fan of the carving station?
I love those.
Good carving station.
Love those carving stations. He will probably enjoy a little bit of the campfire milkshake.
Do you have to take out a second mortgage in order to get one of those? Or
I think all just, you know, throw a bunch of straws in there, four or five straws. We'll just
get some of your friends and neighbors around too,
right?
To pitch in. That'd be great.
Right. It's just about the experience. I don't think they're going to give you a sample of it. I think you got to buy the whole thing.
Well, you got to see who's going to represent at the All-Star game, I suppose.
Were you watching the game on Thursday? This was the game one of the Cleveland series.
No,
this was a fun one. Because Leisure came in, which I'm really enjoying Jordan Leisure. I mean, this is a guy you want to, if you want to start, you know, where are you going to find your hope? Where's the excitement right now? Jordan Leisure has been fun to watch. He comes in the seventh, on Thursday, bases loaded for Cleveland. Nobody out. Sox were up 3-0. By the way, every one of the Sox wins, 3 out of 4 here in this Cleveland series, they were up, I believe. I don't think they trailed in any of those games, which was kind of fun. You know, so that was like the old, you know, years ago. Like, we always talk about it, but 05, man. And I know it's happened in other seasons, but you tune in and maybe you catch it a little late, second, third inning. It's like Sox are up, you know, just like clockwork. And so anyway, that was kind of nice. That hasn't really happened at all this season. But seventh inning on Thursday in this jam, crazy jam, and you got Jordan Leisure coming into the game. I mean, no problem for the guy. No problem whatsoever. That was fun to watch. That was kind of like a wow moment of Cleveland, you know, is this where it goes wrong? You know, we've seen these moments late in the game. Sox give up leads with the bullpen and everything. Leisure, is this moment too big for him? Not at all. I mean, he got out of it. Nothing wasted at all. Leisure said, it's probably one of the biggest moments you can have to come out of that with no damage. I feel comfortable and I'm able to do what I want to do with any pitch in any count. So that's a guy, if you're not watching already, that's a guy to watch and pay attention.
Who was he facing, by the way? Was it one of the 15 Nailers, or was it Jose Ramirez by chance?
Well, you know, Naylor and Ramirez, they're going to continue to do damage as long as you pitch to them. You know, they just absolutely will. I don't, you know, I should have probably jotted down who the batters were, but for Cleveland, but for sure, I was like, you know what? Base is loaded. Nobody out. Come on. Something's going to give here. It's just the way the season has gone.
So Cleveland pulled the White Sox. They decided like, well, there's no need to score with a runner on third and less than two outs.
That was very, that's basically what happened. So that was awesome to see. Could the Sox have been motivated, maybe bulletin board material, by this Athletic article that came out just a few days ago? You know, I subscribe to the Athletic. I know a lot of people got rid of it when James Fegan, basically was given walking papers, which was just horrible. And I'm glad he's still writing and doing work. And he's a great writer. And so I was very involved in the Athletic, and I just kept it, just to kind of keep tabs on the rest of the league and in whatever they decide that they're going to write about on the White Sox. And it was an article on the AL Central, which again was supposed to be this laughable division. You know, anybody can win in the Central. It's the Central. It's very forgiving. We'll see. And it's not the case. This is a tough division, but this was the blurb when they got to the White Sox. The division's glaring weak point is the south side of Chicago, where the White Sox are operating in a bizarre purgatory. A supposed rise to contention 2 years ago dissolved in ugly fashion. Now under the leadership of general manager Chris Getz, the White Sox appear to be tearing down and preparing to start over. They have won only 8 games and have a minus 92 run diff against AL Central foes. They are 2-18, but the success of the rest of the division goes beyond everyone feasting on the dreadful White Sox. Now that was before the series started, and here you go, man. I feel like the Sox, maybe, somebody clued them in on that, but they might have taken that to heart. I don't know. I don't know if it matters for a team that, is kind of scuffling and knows their place, so to speak, and what the season's going to be. But a lot of high marks for the rest of the division. Talked about the Guardians, what they're doing with, their first time manager, Stephen Vogt, and, they're dealing with injuries like everybody else. They pretty much are running it back. And Cleveland, I think, is still hanging in first place as we record by a half game. But, look, I mean, to our point at the beginning, when you kind of put yourself in a grave in April, pretty much, and in the beginning of May, you're going to get hot from time to time, but, just imagine if they went 9-7 at the beginning of the season.
Yeah.
How different things might go. I don't know. People's outlook, maybe the team, the morale, who knows?
Well, if you look at, maybe the mentality of the guys that were here last year that went through a 10-game losing streak in the month of April last year, and you start out the month of April this year like it is, I mean, if you were around again for this ride in April, it's like, man, I know how this story goes, and we're not any better, and we got guys that are down. It's going to be really tough for us this kind of year. This year is kind of over already. But listen, I'll give the players credit, and maybe I'll even give Pedro a little bit of credit for the recent success of, not letting everybody feel sorry for themselves and have a little bit of pride in what you do. Listen, you're up against it. The mathematical probability of you being able to find your way in contention this year is slim and almost nothing. So, but you still have some pride. You have something to play for. And you mentioned it earlier, there's guys that are probably auditioning for their next job. So at some point you have to go, listen, I don't want to be a selfish player, but now I have to kind of play for myself. I've got to play for my career. I've got to play for my family, because if I want to stick around in this league, I've got to do something right now. And maybe that's what motivates you. And if you're a guy like Andrew Vaughn and everybody's like basically down on you, calling you, it was a conversation on the radio this past week, is Andrew Vaughn a bust? And I would tend to agree, even with the couple of doubles and the home run finally and all that stuff. This isn't I equate it to the guy that, listen, if you were touted as one of the most pure hitters that come out of this organization and maybe in all of organizations in a long time, almost can't miss in terms of what he can do with the bat. And he's been so mediocre leading up to this point and so horrific this year that all you can come to the conclusion is that the guy's a bust. So if you're a guy like that, it's like, listen, I got to try and salvage my career. I may be just a journeyman player in this league, but I've got to be at least that. I don't want to be down in the minors and fighting my way back up at some point.
You go from Frank Thomas, Paul Konerko, Jose Abreu, you know, and then Andrew Vaughn. And it's really unfair to be comparing him to those players because of the careers that they've had. But that's what we look at. You know, when someone's taking over that position, well, who was before that player in terms of the team's kind of history and who are you replacing? And, you know, you look at some of Thomas's early numbers. I mean, he won his, you know, first MVP in 93, went back to back 93, 94, you know, came up in 1990. So in just a short few years, you know, again, Frank Thomas is generational talent, Hall of Famer. And we watched, you and I were privileged to watch his career from the beginning to the end. I mean, it's unfair to compare him, but again, that's kind of the order. Paul Konerko, who's Paul Konerko? We were saying to ourselves in the late 90s, you know, in early 2000s, you know, catcher, third base. And, you know, here he is, but, you know, quickly, you know, you saw some of those power numbers. You know, I'll have to go back and kind of compare. Jose Abreu, I mean, rookie of the year. I mean, he put up some big numbers.
When Jose came up, you had to stop and watch him. I mean,
now he had many years playing international. Yeah. Like he wasn't a young dude. You know, age is still questionable. Like, well, how old is he really? But that was, you know, wow. Okay. Vaughn, like when? When now it's a if, it's like is it even going to happen?
Yeah, I can't answer that because I just haven't seen enough. And there's been, again, you think about too along the way some nagging injuries with him. It's always been the back, it's always been the lower back with him, and you know that's always been said. I don't know. I've never played ball, obviously, but. You know, lower backs tend to linger and be around. There's not much you can do for them. So I don't, and I'm not saying he has one. I have no idea what his issue is this year, but I don't know. He's a guy that right now, if somebody offered me something, I would say I'll take it.
I don't think anybody's offering you anything.
I don't think so either, but if they were to offer me maybe a fireside chat milkshake or maybe a walk along the beach milkshake or chat. Whatever.
Fireside chat, an FDR themed milkshake here. It's just Americana running wild. Maybe they changed the name during kind of like 4th of July weekend or something just to really just fireside campfire milkshake.
There you go.
That's a thought.
And we should be really working in marketing.
We've got ideas. We definitely have ideas that we've tried to put out there.
The other night was WWE or wrestling night. Didn't we say years ago that they should do a wrestling night?
We absolutely did. We absolutely did. I think you and I should go next year as maybe the Mega Powers, Macho Man and Hulk Hogan will dress up.
Please, please. You know, I am probably, who was the one that was the police officer?
Big Boss Man.
The Big Boss Man. You know I'm going as Big Boss Man. That's who I need to be. There's no doubt about it. Him or maybe Sergeant Slaughter. We could do that. You could go as Hulkster. I'm going as Sergeant Slaughter.
Okay. WrestleMania 7. That was the Desert Storm, themed. Yeah.
Yeah. And Vince McMahon convinced Sergeant Slaughter to take on the sympathy of the Iraqis, you know, as the Iraqi sympathist and created a character. And it was fantastic.
Yeah. Well, it's something to think. We had a year to plan. Up next, we got the Nationals in town for a 3-game set, off day on Thursday, and then off to the Bronx to take on the Yankees. And we'll be talking about the end of that series. On the next episode, we're going to leave you with some Pedro Grifol quotes of the week. This is in regards to, in regards to Brian Ramos. When a young player doesn't get fazed by a major league atmosphere, there's something there, Pedro Grifol said. But you've still got to go out there and prove it. He's played a handful of games. He's played extremely well, carrying himself extremely well. He's confident. This is a tough game up here. There's a lot of learning to be done here. and there's going to be some mistakes, going to be adjustments. I mean, that's a middle of the road quote. I just like that they're playing him. Absolutely, that's something we talked about last week. I'm glad he's getting playing time, not just like a pinch run, pinch hit, just kind of, you know, you're going to sit here on the bench and see how the game is supposed to be played. No, he's getting actual experience and he's handling himself pretty well.
I wonder if there's any, direction from the front office. Like, listen, we're bringing this guy up. You have to play him. And I would hope that Getz would have that kind of, intestinal fortitude to go down and talk to his manager and say, listen, we didn't bring this guy up to just, pinch run or pinch hit once in a while to let him swing and miss three times because he's coming in a situation where he's not going to be able to handle it. We need to give him an opportunity because this could be a cornerstone and a piece for our future.
Yeah. As Ian mentioned, and it's the glove too. The glove plays, and there's going to be ups and downs. It's obvious, as Pedro mentioned. And again, just like a pitcher, a position player has to go through that too. They've got to struggle at the plate. I think you'll be able to see, like, is this struggling because they're trying to adjust to major league pitching, which that's a big thing. You're going to have to adjust because the pitchers are going to make adjustments on you. The book's going to get out, videos everywhere. And I think it's already starting to happen a little bit of where is his weak spots? Where is growing edges? Like where do we attack Brian Ramos? And how quickly does Brian Ramos make those adjustments? Other guys, that we've seen over the years, they haven't been able to make those adjustments. So we don't see them anymore, at 35th and Shields. Hopefully that's not the case with Brian Ramos. He makes those adjustments. And that's why you got to keep playing him. He's got to go through those periods. He's got to be able to test himself.
Yeah, no doubt about it, Nick. I'm glad to see it. I'm glad to see him play, and I'm excited to continue to see him play.
Here's our last Pedro Grifol quote of the week. Luke McDowell got my attention on this one on Twitter X. Thank you, Luke. This was from, I think, Vinny Duber of CHGO captured this moment. This was Pedro Grifol saying how he loved Martin Maldonado's work with Jordan Leisure to escape that bases loaded jam that I was discussing earlier. I'm actually okay with the results at the plate. He hasn't played 12 years because he hits 300. He's played as long as he's played because of what he does behind the plate. What we're getting there, which I don't even think is much defensively, putting those right fingers down, we're going to see a lot more Maldonado, I think.
Again, most calls come from the bench, or they normally do these days. Why is that so important? I don't know.
Veterans. He loves a good veteran. So, Pat, I got to tell you, it's been exciting the last few days watching our White Sox. Take it one game at a time, maybe, but that was fun. 3 out of 4 from Cleveland was great. And to see some of the things that we saw from guys that we talked about that I think are going to play into the future for this White Sox team, that was probably the most exciting.
Yeah, and this team is right now working for the weekend. They love the weekends. They're playing well on the weekends, which makes it fun for us to do a podcast on a Sunday night. So let's see what the week brings. Again, there's some opportunities out there to play well and get some wins here. And it's nice to be talking about a team that may not contend for the worst record in all of baseball history with the Cleveland Spiders. So let's continue some winning ways.
Silver lining. I love it, Pat. Always a pleasure, buddy. Thank you folks so very much jumping in on the chat, following us here live on the Good Guys Talk Back YouTube channel. Really appreciate it. Subscribe, like, pass it along. On a Mother's Day weekend, it was summer-like temps. Joining us here on Sunday night, it means a lot. We've got the audio absolutely everywhere. We're on Twitter X, @GoodGuysTB, and we've got a Facebook fan page. Hey, for Pat Hester, I am Nick Morawski. Until next time, go Sox!